The J-Talk Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk Podcast. I'm Ben Maxwell. After an action-packed J1 Match Day 21, I'm joined by Alan Gibson and first-time J-Talk guest Tobias Dreiman to review all of the games. Firstly, Alan, welcome back to the podcast for the first time since the World Cup. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's always a pleasure. And, for the first time ever, Tobias, welcome to J-Talk. It's great to have you on.
Yeah, thank you for the invitation. Really an honour to be here. Thank you.
You are more than welcome. And letting the listeners know, Alan and Tobias are actually sat on the opposite corners of the same pub in Kobe. They've lined up a bit of a meeting around the recording of this podcast, so you can probably hear some laughter and some atmosphere in the background. That's because they're both in the same venue. Alan, give this place a bit of a plug. Where are you, and is this a place you often frequent?
Yep, and it's a great pizza I'm eating. I'm at the Harbour Tavern in Kobe, which is actually the place I DJ at once a month. And they always show Japanese football as well as the Premier League, of course. So it used to be the Hobgoblin, actually, so the Hobgoblin Kobe.
All right, what do you think, Tobias? You give it the two thumbs up? Is it decent enough for a pub in Kobe there?
Oh, yeah. Actually, I have to admit, I'm not a regular guest here, but I really like it. The food is good. Also, so totally recommend it.
Yeah. And it's fantastic to hear everybody having a ripping time there at the Harbour Tavern, and fantastic indeed. To the listeners, the name Tobias Dreiman might not mean much, but I think the Twitter handle @Kondrai probably does to a lot of people. So yes, that is who Tobias is, and I've got him on the podcast this week because he's on a bit of a footballing odyssey in Japan. He's told me in preparation for the recording tonight that he's basically in the middle of a 3.5 week stay in Japan, and he's taking in as much football as he can. So, Tobias, why don't you run us through some of the games that you've been to, some of the different stadiums around Japan, and how you found it all?
Yeah, actually, so the idea of the whole trip is obviously kind of a ground-hopping tour. So this is kind of a chance I wanted to use as I'm traveling alone this time. So I have visited several games since I got here at the end of July, starting with first time Ajinomoto Stadium, your very welcome home place, I guess, Ben. Watching the FC Tokyo against Levada Nagasaki, not with a good turnout for your side, but still interesting and funny game. Got a chance to be at Hitachi Dai in Kashiwa. It's also very, very interesting. Maybe you can go into this a little later. And yeah, there's several other places. Kashima Soccer Stadium, the Denshi. Went to Kansai for the Suruga Bank Championship, to this Suita Stadium. Was the first time that I got there. And now I have like a very, very stressful weekend behind me with a Friday game in Osaka in Suita, Gamba versus FC Tokyo again, and Saturday Sanfrecce versus Ibaran, the peace match, very, very nice game. And yesterday I was in Yamaguchi watching Renova versus Okushima Fortis in the J2.
Goodness gracious me, what a mouthful, and what a fantastic time it must have been for you, Tobias. I mean, You're probably making a lot of supporters overseas jealous, but you're also making me jealous. I mean, you've been to quite a few stadiums in your trip in the last couple of weeks that I've never been to, so absolutely brilliant. And I'm sure you've had a wonderful time. I just do have to put in a request, though. I hope for the rest of your time in Japan you're not going to see FC Tokyo again, because you've been a bit of a jinx. Our last two losses to Nagasaki and Gamba, you've both been in attendance. So I hope you've had your fill of watching FC Tokyo lose.
Well, I'm a little fed up with FC Tokyo, actually, though they disappointed me a little. No, but actually, I rescheduled on being at Vissel versus Sanfrecce on next Wednesday before I return back home to Germany on Friday. Yeah,
absolutely brilliant. And we'll come on to that game later, obviously, but that shapes to be a possible season definer. All right, well, we'll get on to what happened in Match Day 21. Alan, it was a long overdue victory for Gamba Osaka over FC Tokyo. A 2-1 it finished. Ad Milson struck the winner in the 95th minute. And a first win for Sunny Yasu Miyamoto So tell us, I know you weren't there, but you've watched the game since, how much this win means for Gumba, especially in the wake of some of the points they've dropped coming back off the World Cup break.
Indeed, I think the new manager adrenaline kicked in for the two games before that, but Gamba were very unlucky to drop the points at Jubilo Iwata to that late goal, and got their own back with Adam Wilson late, of course. There's been a big improvement, even though they lost one and drew one. I think there was a huge improvement as soon as Miyamoto took over. And ironically, because Kolpe was so known for bringing in young players, Miyamoto brought in his own young player, and seems to have kept some of the young players on their toes and joined them in, because he's been doing the under-23 team for a season and a bit, a season and a half, I suppose. He knows the kids very well, so quite ironic that Kolpe moves out and that more kids come in. Then he got rid of Matthias, the defensive midfielder, who was just he wasn't such a bad player, but I guess he was brought in to help Kolpe with the Brazilian. And only today, of course, we've seen another transfer. Do we talk about that? Do you know about that?
I don't. Go for it, yeah.
Kazuma Watanabe has just joined Gamba Osaka.
A bit of laughter in the background there. That was
and Shun Nagasawa has gone the other way.
Well timed.
I think they should have laughed when I said, and Shun Nagasawa has moved to Kobe.
Right.
That would have been a bigger. So that's an interesting move for the day. I think Gamba deserved the win in the end, didn't they? I'm sorry to say that. Against an FC Tokyo fan. But they've definitely a big change, a big improvement over three games, so thank God they got the win. There's a lot of... Miyamoto's a bit of a reserved guy, so he wasn't jumping up and down on the touchline like a la Mourinho would have done, perhaps. But it was obvious to see the relief. And some of these kids don't know how to win, It's been such a long time. So I think the confidence will grow a little bit. The results will come. And Gamba will be in the ACL in 2019. That's where the laughter should be, right?
Yes, I was waiting for that. All right, okay, well, let's ask the neutral whether Gamba deserved to win or not. But firstly, Alan, sorry, let me go back a second. When you were speaking, you dropped out a couple of times for just a second or two, and you said that Miyamoto brought his own player in, and that you dropped out for a second, and then I heard the last syllable you said was Ko. Something Ko came into the team?
Yes, very youngster called Ko, from the his kanji is Taka, but it's pronounced Ko, and he's basically I think he's going to be hard work because it's immediately he has to bring in his own little formation, his own players, his own frame of mind to get rid of the losing mentality. So it was interesting to see immediate changes, and even though they lost one and then drew one, there was so much. It was so obvious that they were a better team. And the players were like playing with a smile on their face, for want of a better word. And they obviously love Miyamoto. They've known him very well. They respect him a lot. And I think, for want of a better phrase, the old Kolpe had lost the dressing room kind of thing.
Right.
So, to me, even though, as I said, they drew one, they lost one, but the change was immediate and it was obvious.
All right then, yes, Takahiro Ko that is the player Alan was referring to. So thanks, Alan, for confirming that for us. So, okay, Tobias. Alan said that Gamba eventually were deserved winners on Friday night. I'm not sure I agree, but they've claimed the 3 points and they were much needed, and fair play to them. It was a fantastic strike from Ad Milson to win it. What are your thoughts overall on the game? You can agree with Alan or agree with me or anywhere in the middle. What did you think?
Maybe just for the context, like the first game I visited in the J-League was already 10 years ago, and it happened to be like a summer game against Nagoya Grampus back then. So I'm not like totally neutral, but to be honest, I don't think it was well deserved. I think that people would have quite a good game on their hands, or on their foot, may I say. But yeah, the lucky punch really at the overtime, I think it was. I didn't see it in the stadium actually, but it was, as I heard, like extension time. So got the lucky 3 points, and it's like very, very important point for Gamba, like in the relegation zone.
I suddenly heard you very clearly there, Tobias, after hearing a lot of background noise for most of the time you were speaking there.
Sorry, well, we must apologise to all the listeners. It's not your fault, it's ours. We're enjoying ourselves. But I think, can we mention Diego Oliveira's goal? What a classic goal that was. Absolutely brilliant.
Yes, yes. I mean, well, yeah, I was going to go through quickly the strikes before Adam Ilson's winner, Alan. Yeah, so 11 minutes before halftime, Fabio bundled in from 6 yards out to give Gumba the lead at the break after Yasuhito Endo's cross was not dealt with by the Tokyo defence. And after a number of chances in the second half, most of them I would say came at the Tokyo end. Teemu Tadashi in particular was wasteful with a header, but saying that, Shu Kurata blasted against the post, so that if it was 2-0 to Gumba with 20 minutes to go, that might have been it. It might have been curtains, but yes, Diego Oliveira fired home with just 4 minutes left in the 90, a determined run that saw off three defenders before he rifled in to the roof of the net, an absolutely superb goal, and Tokyo felt they deserved the equaliser and would go on to perhaps nick it at the death, considering how shaky Gumba had been in recent weeks. But yes, it was not to be. Gumba countered in the 95th minute, and Admilson smashed his winner between two defenders and out of the reach of Akihiro Hayashi. So yes, it was a special from Oliveira, and he continues to surprise, and I guess he continues to make Kashua Reysol, the people behind the scenes there, Alan, look a little bit foolish for letting him go on loan to Tokyo.
Indeed, I have no idea what's going on there. I mean, Reysol are heading for J2 the way they're playing. And I think Kosuke Nakamura is perhaps he's apparently injured with concussion right now, but I reckon he's actually actively looking for a move out, and they're just sort of trying to work their way through being without him for the rest of the season and his career now, I think. But Cristiano is obviously missing a compatriot, although I believe Reysol have just signed a new Brazilian. Nakatani, a centre-back now, I think he's just got injured for a month, so their problems compound. And I think it's time for change of the manager at the Reysol before it's too late.
Just in the throw-in, because I was lucky enough to accompany maybe the daily committee notion a little bit from the line chat group, but the Benjamin gave me an opportunity to follow the Kashima Reysol for the whole match day. It was a pretty interesting insight into the whole structure. But I noticed that there's no manager to change plans in Kashima. So they will work again with the actual manager at the end of the season.
All right, well, they'll have to dig themselves out of a fair bit of trouble, which we'll come on to later. Another defeat for Reysol over the weekend. All right, so Gumba got their weekend off to a fantastic start, obviously, on Friday night, and they would have been feeling very, very good about themselves heading into the rest of the games being played on Saturday. And then the other occupants of the relegation zone and 15th placed at kickoff, Yokohama, all went and won as well. So Gumba actually didn't make up any ground at all on the teams that were around them at kickoff, although they've made up some ground definitely on the Vivara Nagasaki, who we'll get to with Tobias in just a minute. But yeah, Alan, at the end of the day, obviously it's great for Gumba to get that win. It was much needed, no questions at all about that. But then, yeah, to see the other three teams around them all go and win as well, I guess that must have been a little bit deflating at the end of the weekend.
I think it's probably Nagoya Grampus who have deflated the most after against Kashima Antlers off the bottom of the table, and Sagan Tosu actually get a win as well, and Gamba win, and then F. Marino's got a win. I think, to be honest, the teams that are going to have problems are Reysol, Vivara, Nagasaki, and yeah, this is going to be a fight between the other four I've just mentioned, I suppose, to get out of the zone. But Vivaran and Reysol look as if they're heading down right now, don't it? It was interesting again, though. All the guys winning at the bottom squeezes it really as well. It's like it's incredibly tight.
Yeah, absolutely. So Yokohama, well, we'll come back obviously to the situation at the top with Tokyo losing ground on Hiroshima. But yes, at the foot of the table, as Alan's referenced there, I mean, Gumba stayed in 17th and Nagoya stayed bottom, but yes, Nagasaki are now in the relegation zone. Goal difference behind Tosu, who won against Urawa at home 1-0. Reysol slipped to 14th below Yokohama. Reysol are goal difference behind F. Marinos now after Reysol lost at home to Sendai, and Yokohama won a Kanagawa derby away at Shonan, who are now just 3 points above F. Marinos in 12th. So, yeah, Shonan just 5 points outside the drop zone. And Shimizu, who also lost this weekend, are just 6 points outside the relegation zone. So, yeah, a lot of ground still to go in the season, obviously, and some teams still with their games in hand on the teams above or around them. But, yes, it's going to be very tight, it looks like, the rest of the way. Okay, well, yes, let's turn to the top of the table now. Sanfrecce Hiroshima came into the match day 5 points ahead of FC Tokyo, but they knew that Tokyo had lost, obviously, on the Friday night. They had a chance to extend their gap to 8 points on Saturday night at home against Nagasaki. Tobias, you were there. You moved from Osaka down to Hiroshima during the day on Saturday, and you saw Hiroshima run out 2-0 winners.
Yeah, so maybe just for a side effect, I wanted to go in winter, actually, to do this, like, ground hopping tour, but since I knew last season that Nagasaki was promoted and Sanfrecce, which was not that obvious, did not get relegated last season, so I thought I had to go to Japan for this peace match. It was a really, really special occasion, and yeah, it was totally worth it. It was very, very nice game. It was very, very lovely to see the matchup, the fans going really respectful with one another. And to be honest, like the game itself, I didn't get as much as I probably would have liked to, as I'm with the Sanfrecce Usus down there jumping, singing. So, but it was a little, how can you say, a little boring game, as only a little goal chances were created within a game. But it was a very, very brilliant shot, free kick by Kosei Shigasaki to get the lead for Sanfrecce. And as far as I can like analyze the game of Sanfrecce, having the lead in a game gets them to the point where they just like stabilize the defense, waiting for another counter, another standard situation, and just let the time run out, which gave them the chance to add their lead to 2-0 by a goal by Taylor Vizanga, which was a counter attack.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Tobias, you're not first person to come on the podcast this season and say that, yeah, Hiroshima matches aren't the most exciting. Yeah, Alan, I'm not sure which side of the fence you sit on when it comes to the way Hiroshima play. There's obviously some who admire their effectiveness, and there's others who think, yeah, it's a bit of a blight on J1, frankly, they're top of the table, but they've done, obviously, superbly well to get the results they have so far. Whether they're easy on the eye is obviously irrelevant to Hiroshi Jovoku and his players, of course. They're very happy to be sitting 8 points clear on top of the table, but yeah, I mean, what have you made of Sanfrecce? Well, since the break, at least, they've had a couple of wobbles, haven't they? But this was a game they really needed to drive home their advantage, with Tokyo having lost on the Friday night.
Indeed. I think Jofuku's done extremely well with the tools that he has. And I think if we give Jofuku some credit, that whichever players he managed to get hold of, he would do the job with them. He seems to know what he's doing. He's taking these guys. They move in like phalanxes, like Roman soldiers or something. They all move in formation. They're like the lines, this like four line of four, a line of four, and a line of two at the front. And they seem to be within 10 or 20 yards of each other. It's very, very well drilled, and they do their jobs. Completely different to when Moriyasu and even Petrovic before that, where they had the 3-6-1, and if a centre-back went up, another right-back would cover, and they just rotated around and covered each other, whereas Joe Fuku's guys are all together, up and down together, back together, and working so hard. You know, I can't... Nobody can complain about it, I suppose. You know, we've got the Grampus and the Gamba, and the way that people are scoring goals and letting goals in. Sanfrecce, I think they had like 1-0 wins about 7 times before the World Cup. After the World Cup, they seem to have relaxed or gone lax a little bit at the back. And there's more goals coming now. And to be honest, I wasn't sure they could keep it up. And I think that a team will catch them. And I thought it might be FC Tokyo, but it's looking to be more likely to be Frontale, I reckon. And if Vissel can win the next game, it's the key point, I think. Even Vissel, perhaps.
Yeah. Yes, it was two extremely well-taken goals by Kosei Shibasaki just before half-time. A lovely free kick into the top left-hand corner. And then, yes, with just 2 minutes to go, Tirasil Dangda finish off a rapid counter-attack that began with a Hiroshima throw deep in their own half. So, yes, that advantage is back out to 8 points now for Sun Prechi. And, well, yes, Tobias, before we move off this game, I mean, it obviously was a highly charged occasion and a wonderful one to have both of these clubs in J1 together for the first time. Obviously, their fixture was scheduled in the week of the 73rd anniversary of the atomic bombings that struck both cities, of course. So just, you mentioned where you were in the stadium, but just talk us through a little bit about the build-up. You know, how early you got there, what it was like milling around before the game actually got going.
So this is like the third game now I attended by Sun Prechi. The first game was 4 years ago in the ATL. So what I really like to do, I mean, this is not something that I take for granted, even though this is a special occasion, this is a game against the bottom. That so many people came to the arena. It was about 20,000 people attending the game, which is for so Hiroshima. Supporters maybe know the numbers. It's not that often that they have so many people attending the game, especially since on the same day there was a home game of the baseball team Hiroshima Carp, which is normally like very, very packed, very full of people. And so this is the first thing that really got to my eyes in a very positive way, having so many people attending this special match, this special occasion. I even didn't get a match scarf I really wanted to have for this special occasion, because they were so old already when I got there. But it was really a lovely situation before the game started. So the Hiroshima fans shouted, "Nagasaki, Nagasaki." The Nagasaki fans responded, "Hiroshima, Hiroshima." So it was really a respectful manner between both sides of the supports, which was really crowded also on the side of Nagasaki. And it was a really special match with a better outcome for my side in Hiroshima. But so it will be difficult for Vival and I get to keep in a day one. And so we will have next season a match. I doubt it at all.
All right, I hope the listeners could hear the end of Tobias's answer there. It appears that there's a train actually going through the middle of the Harbour Tavern. So this is absolutely fantastic atmosphere.
It's just passing through.
Can I have a little word on that too? The pre-game was really, really amazing with Sun Prechi actually wore their shirts with orange numbers on the back to represent Nagasaki. And Nagasaki prepared their super special peace shirts with purple numbers on the back representing Sun Prechi, which was really cool. I didn't realize it until after I checked the photos taken by Lionel Pierre later that they weren't allowed to wear those blue shirts in the game. They didn't actually wear the peace shirts in that game. They wore white shirts, and I'm really looking forward to finding out if that was the J-League or the referee on the day. But they intended to wear them because they had them prepared with the purple numbers on, which was, I thought, was really nice. So anyway, pictures in J-Soccer magazine later to give it a little plug.
Terrific stuff. Yeah, it was a great... Great that you were able to be there, Tobias. And yes, Lionel's photos. Yeah, looking forward to seeing those in an upcoming issue of J Soccer, Alan. All right. Well, so we know that Hiroshima extended their lead over Tokyo to 8 points with their win on Saturday night. Well, Kawasaki edged to within a point of Tokyo themselves. They stayed third, but just a point behind second place Tokyo now after a 2-1 away win at Shimizu. Espols took a fifth-minute lead thanks to a brilliant goal from Douglas. He was fed by Mitchell Duke and lashed home early doors. But Yu Kobayashi headed in Elsinho's cross 13 minutes before the break. And then just past the hour marker, Ryota Oshima finished clinically after a neat assist from Kobayashi. So Kawasaki are top of the form table with the 4 wins from their last 5 games. They're clicking on all cylinders at the moment, and if there is to be a challenger, a realistic challenger to Hiroshima, it's more likely, I would say, to be Kawasaki than FC Tokyo. And that's probably my natural pessimism shining through. But then Tokyo's last 2 losses have come to teams in the bottom 6, Nagasaki and Gunma. So with getting results like that, it's not championship winning form by you any stretch of the imagination. So to me, yes, sooner or later Kawasaki will probably zoom past Tokyo, and then it might be a race in two, or Hiroshima might not give them a sniff at all if they carry on as smoothly as they did against Nagasaki on Saturday night. So, Torbayas, how do you see the top three shaking out? Alan's mentioned Kobe as a possible challenger. I think that's wishful thinking, as they sit 16 points behind Hiroshima. They're fourth in the table, which is a superb performance from them. But yes, to be so far back, I can't see them making up that ground with 13 games to go. Stranger things have happened, and this is the J-League, of course. But to me, it looks a race in three, and more realistically, a race in two. But where do you sit on it?
So you mentioned that you share a little pessimism with your own team, so I agree the same with Kampeche, because I personally don't see them being that stable for the whole season. But I said that so after a quarter of the season was played. I say this now, I probably will say this many days before they make the championship, but I think on Wednesday it will be a very decisive game against the Sokoba, with Iniesta and Podolski maybe getting in shape, bringing the offense in shape, scoring goals, and I fear that even Hiroshima, with kind of a stable defensive approach they have under Hiroshi Dofuku, that they will crack this defense open and score goals. So if Diso is going to win on Wednesday, I see them with a slight chance to make it at least Champions League places, which is kind of a goal, I guess, for the whole investment Miki Tani is taking there. But with the championship, it's a little bit difficult. I think only Sam Fletcher can give up on their own championship approach. And as you said, it's a J-League. It can happen. There's nothing to be excluded from any mind games you can do with this table situation at the moment. So let's see. I'm curious to see Wednesday's game against the football.
Yes, it shapes as an absolute cracker, and we can discuss it in more detail in just a moment. After we cover Kobe's game on Saturday night, they've set up this crackerjack home clash against Hiroshima after winning 2-1 over Iwata on Saturday night, and it featured the goal seen all around the world in the 15th minute. Andres Iniesta took a pass from Lucas Podolski, and Alan, the rest is now, as I said, a goal hurled around the world. It was a fantastic piece of skill from Iniesta. Talk us through it. It must have been electric to be in the stadium when that goal went in.
It was crazy. As a Vissel watcher, as a local man, but also as a J-League watcher and even a DAZN subscriber, everybody must have done that. DAZN must have been jumping up and down in their chairs if the little circle didn't stop. And then Vissel Kobe, I mean, the owners and the manager, I mean, everybody was going nuts because it was Iniesta, of course, but because it was such an amazing goal, wasn't it? I mean, the pass from Podolski was lovely, and then the way he just put his foot and dragged the ball back and took out the defender, then he feinted to take the keeper, and the keeper went down, and he took it around him and put it in the net. And, you know, I think everybody knew as soon as the ball was dragged back that was going in. Everybody's on their feet already. As you say, it was a goal that probably took. It's probably exactly what the J League wanted, and DAZN, of course, because it was shown on every TV channel around the world, I'm sure.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, tweeted out almost instantly Sports Illustrated in America, their official account, tweeted out a highlight. Gary Lineker tweeted out a highlight. It was, it made the news very quickly, and it was seen by lots and lots of eyeballs very quickly. So yeah, fantastic. For Vissel Kobe, fantastic for the J-League, and as Alan said, first and foremost, an absolutely brilliant goal, Tobias. Podolski feeding Iniesta, and magic ensued.
Yeah, in fact, I know that the German DAZN actually sent a team over here to do some social media around the J-League and around, obviously, Vissel Kobe and Podolski. So I think they really got a little bit excited about Podolski passing the assistant path to this incredible goal, which I also saw, even though I don't get much action around the game for the time, because it's kind of a heavy schedule I attend. But this goal I couldn't miss in all over Twitter, all over the Instagram, whatever. And really lovely goal, and I hope this will catch up a little attention also around Germany. so we can have like more people share this beautiful league and our hobby, as it appears.
Absolutely. All right, Alan. So the first podcast back after the World Cup break, I had Sam Robson and Dan Ulowitz on, and I asked Sam how much attention that the moves of Iniesta to Kobe and Fernando Torres to Sagan Tosu had garnered in the British media. Obviously, two Spaniards you wouldn't imagine would make a huge amount of impact on the British media, but those two players obviously are well known across the world. And, yes, yeah, Sam let us know that there actually was quite a bit of coverage on both of them. So what about actually literally on the streets of Kobe since Iniesta has come? There was obviously a little bit of snarkiness about the fact that he went back to Spain and missed a game or two that were pretty much sold out around people expecting him to be there. So whether you want to weigh in on that, and I believe Iniesta probably starting to play for Kobe earlier than most of us expected when he originally signed. But anyway, I mean, what's the mood been like in Kobe? Have you noticed more Vissel Kobe stuff around, flags on the street, flagpoles on the street and things like that, or more interest in the club in general, or how's it been?
It's pretty amazing. I look at the crowd in the I'm lucky enough to stand on the field and be able to see the crowd, and I look up into the crowd in the main stand, and there are so many Spanish shirts already. There's already German shirts there. There's German, Spanish, the Spanish shirts, and there's all white faces and black faces and all sorts of non-Japanese people there, many, many more than there used to be. People are just talking to me. People that have never been to a J-League game. People who are 70 years old, people who have got 7-year-old kids from all around the world, and Japanese people too, are just saying, how can I get a ticket? How can I get a ticket? Because I'm the guy to go to ask about J-League, right? So many different people are asking me for tickets, which of course I can't do. And then we've got, as you said, to take the other point separately, is that FC Tokyo and Shona, what was it, Cerezo or Osaka? The gamers were close to, well, sold out in FC Tokyo and very close to sold out in Cerezo Osaka, based on Iniesta, it seems. But I think I mentioned it on Twitter and Facebook, and basically I was saying that it was more DAZN, J-League, and perhaps the home teams were a little bit more to blame than Vissel, because Vissel had actually put out all of the publicity saying August 11th, Iniesta, Podolski, and they both actually made it back to that game. So I think they brought on Iniesta as a substitute and then gave him a start before they were actually planning to. But I actually searched for it before I could deny this, but I searched all over and I couldn't find anywhere that Vissel Kobe had claimed that he was going to be playing. So I can't really blame Vissel Kobe for any of that. And I think the Iniesta lookalike at FC Tokyo made up for it anyway, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. One of the highlights of the season, no doubt about that. Yeah, so, Tobias, obviously we've known about Lukas Podolski being in Kobe for pretty much a season now. So what about the impact? How much sort of coverage on a week-to-week basis does Podolski get? And then, the fact that Iniesta has joined the same club. Before you left Germany, was Vissel Kobe getting a lot more coverage in the German media in general?
So it depends on what kind of media you're looking at. So if you look at the regular news stations, of course, it was like mentioned that Iniesta's coming to Japan to Vissel Kobe as Podolski did last year. But you have, for example, Podolski as a guy from Cologne. You have Cologne media that is really focusing on him as a player in Japan. And also the Zone tried to kick off some more interest with this league because of Podolski playing in Japan. So as I just mentioned, they had like a social media team coming to Japan to gather around the J-League. And as it happens to be dealing with the J-League for almost around 8 years, I sometimes get the chance to talk to the commentator, because we have like German live coverage with commentator in the DAZN package. And so they are curious to know about Podolski, how is he doing in Vissel, and also the Iniesta move gave a more global approach to this whole situation in Kobe. But we are ourselves trying to get something of this. We started with our own German language based on our social media channels on Twitter and Facebook. And we get some reception, and some people who have been following J-League maybe 10 years ago or 8 years ago who wanted to follow the J-League now because of Podolski playing Vissel Kobe, following Vissel Kobe then. We got some feedback from that, and so I'm curious to see how this will all develop, even on Wednesday with Iniesta and Kobe playing against Sanfrecce. Let's see how this works out, and hope we can get them more interest for this week.
Absolutely. All right. So before we fully go ahead and try and preview that game on Wednesday night with Kobe hosting Hiroshima, of course, after Iniesta's goal in the 15th minute, as amazing as it was, the teams then had to go and play the last 75 minutes of the game, of course. And in that time, there was another terrific goal scored by Kobe, and it's a player who got a mention on last week's podcast in the J2 special, and I'm sure that Kyogo Furuhashi's first goal for Kobe Allen will have brought a tear to the eye of Stuart Smith and indeed his fellow Gifu supporting comrade Richie Palmer there. It was a lovely strike from Furuhashi to open his Kobe account, and I saw you tweet after the game that you had a chance to catch up with Furuhashi in the mix zone, so I'm sure he must have been cock-a-hoop after that goal.
Funny you should say that, because he was very, very reserved,
right,
almost shy, and selecting his words carefully. He was very, very humble, very, very. I really like him. I mean, I've been watching him all season in J2, actually, thinking he'd get a move next year to a bigger team. But to get into my local team, I was very happy because he really is a talent, and of course everybody else asked me the same question in Japanese as well, of course. But everybody said, well, 2 weeks ago you're in a team that are struggling at the bottom of J2, and now you're playing next to Iniesta and Podolski. How does it feel? And he was like, well, it was very interesting, and very. he was very, very reserved and selective. It was great to see. He's obviously he's got his head on his shoulders, and I really like the guy.
Absolutely brilliant. So yes, with just over half an hour left, the Kobe were 2-0 up. Sorry, the game finished 2-1 after Iwata were awarded a penalty in the 83rd minute when that man again, Andres Iniesta, clipped Hiroki Yamada's heel. The referee pointed to the spot, and Kengo Kawamata dispatched the spot kick. Yes, Iwata were not able to equalize in the remaining 7 minutes. So Kobe moved back up to fourth place in the table above Consadole Sapporo, who drew 1-1 at home with Cerezo Osaka. And there probably isn't a massive amount we need to spend, on that game. Both goals came in the first 10 minutes. Mata Jonic headed Cerezo in front in just the 6th minute. But then it was a spectacular strike, it must be said, to equalise from Chanatip for Sapporo just a minute later. A superb volley from 25 yards. But yes, Sapporo won all at home against Cerezo. That result does neither team much good, frankly. And as I said, it allowed Kobe to move back up to fourth place in the table. So, okay, Alan, let's talk about this game. I'm sure you're going to be there on Wednesday night, and Tobias will be as well. How do you think Kobe will go about stopping this San Franche machine?
I'm going to be very interested in it. I was talking to Tobias earlier, and I think it really is a six-pointer. I'm serious about Vissel Kobe actually being able to win the championship if they can win this game. If they lose this game, it's all over. But if they win this game, they'll be on a roll. The guys are all fit. San Francisco will be pegged back a little. It could be very, very interesting. And I don't think Vissel will change the plans at all. They have a very good new centre back in Leo, who came from Tokushima Vought. Watanabe Hirofumi is a pretty good centre back too, and they have Fujita Omita in the defensive midfield there. And I think basically they'll attack. They'll attack. I don't think they know any better. And Tiraton looked an amazing player. I mean, I like him already. I'm wearing his shirt today, actually. Can you see it? Doesn't it look nice?
It looks and, really nice.
Thank you. But Tiraton looked like, because the players around him were even better, he came up to their level. So they've got, Bissell basically have an excellent team now and an excellent squad to choose from. And if they can, I don't think they're going to change. I don't think they can change. They just should play their own game, try to score goals, and hopefully peg back Patrick, perhaps, is the main man.
All right, then. How do you see it going, Tobias, on Wednesday night? Obviously, it would be better for the title race, if there is to be one, if Kobe could get their business done and, hold the serve at home, if you like, and defeat Hiroshima with the second place Tokyo and third place Frontale, both at home against teams currently in the bottom six. You would expect that they would have a perfect opportunity to capitalize if Kobe are able to make some hay in that game. Although, once again, yes, I'm going to mention that Tokyo's last two losses have come to teams in the bottom six, so they shouldn't be overconfident when they host Kashiwa on Wednesday night. But yes, Kawasaki will look to keep the good times rolling when Fernando Torres and Tosu visit Todoroki. So we'll see what happens in those two games. But yes, how do you see Kobe going against Hiroshima, or vice versa? Do you think Hiroshima will be able to impose their usual game plan on Kobe? Yes, they seem to be clicking into a decent vein of form themselves.
Yeah, so as a neutral standing in the Wednesday case. Actually, would like to see Tampa to win and believe on the one end, but actually, what really amazes me about the J-League is quite equal, so there's no dominant team, like, for example, my home Villa, the Bundesliga, where the FC Bayern is, like, winning everything that can be prevented from winning. But having Tampa so far on top, as a more neutral approach, I really would like to see maybe a win for Vitekova. Also to see maybe some nice action from Iniesta, as I'm already here. But don't get me wrong, if San Francisco in this game, they always did before and win the championship in the long term, I don't mind at all. So let's see what happens. Curious to see.
All right, then. It looks like things. Sounds like things are starting to really kick off for the evening at the Harbour Tavern. So we'll try and round up these last three games from match day 21. They're fairly sharpish, and let you guys enjoy the rest of your evening. I've mentioned that Tokyo and Kawasaki are at home against the Kashiwa Reysol and Sagan Tosu respectively on Wednesday night. Well, those two teams had very different results at home last Saturday night. Reysol lost 2-0 at home to Vegalta Sendai, a very important win for them that sees them up to 8th spot in the table, while Tosu secured a somewhat controversial win over Urawa 1-0 at home thanks to Hideto Takahashi's header in the 53rd minute. It appeared that Reds had scored a perfectly legitimate equaliser 2 minutes from time, but the goal was a disallowed for a Tadanari Lee foul on the Shuichi Gonda. He was adjudged to have impeded the goalkeeper as Yosuke Kashiwagi's corner was swung in. And the last game that we'll cover, I've mentioned the result already, but it was a 1-0 win for Yokohama at Shonan in the latest Kanagawa derby. A header from Hugo Vieira in the 48th minute won it for Yokohama. And we were speaking to Sean Goldbraith last week, obviously, and yes, he was obviously very worried about F. Marino slipping down into the relegation zone. That obviously still might happen at some point in the rest of the season, because just like Gumba, they didn't really make up any ground on the teams below them, as all of the bottom four won this weekend, as I mentioned earlier. But they did move up two spots in the table to 13th above both the Kashiwa Reysol and Nagasaki, whose losses we've already covered, of course. So, yes, we've talked about the big fixtures that dominate the fixtures on Wednesday night. It's Kobe hosting Hiroshima. That's fourth hosting first, while Tokyo and Kawasaki are both at home against the bottom six opposition. And then, of course, after Wednesday's games, there's another round on Sunday. That'll be match day 23. And in that one, there's another humdinger, and you'd make a legitimate argument for match of the season here. Hiroshima hosting third-placed Kawasaki at the Edeon Stadium on Sunday night. I'm not sure if you can extend your trip for another few days at Tobias to catch that one as well, but that would be an absolute cracker.
Yeah, it would be a quite interesting match, especially since Kawasaki was, betrayed in the game back in Kawasaki when the offside position, or meant to be offside position, was ended in a goal against Kawasaki. So that's what was one reason why I'm not too confident about that getting a championship back then, because 3 points or 2 more points than they would have got against Kawasaki Frontale, with the draw being denied because of this false decision by the referee. This will be an interesting game to see. So Kawasaki as a reigning champion just have to make a lot up to against Hiroshima, and I assume that sometimes I think they will have to break down and concede more goals than they did before.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other games on Sunday, there are of interest. Currently fifth place, Sapporo will host FC Tokyo. That's the early game on Sunday at 1 o'clock at the Sapporo Dome. And while we're on Kobe, they visit the BMW Stadium to face Shonan. And that game, I'm reliably informed by my brother-in-law, is a sellout. And I must admit, it might sound like I'm trolling Nagoya supporters, but I completely forgot to mention that arguably the game of the day on the Saturday was at Nagoya winning 4-2 at home over Kashima. We've covered all these other teams at the bottom that obviously won their games, and I've completely neglected to mention Nagoya. But what a performance from Grampus it was, and they are absolutely... Well, yes, they've made themselves relevant again, and they're now just 2 points from safety, and actually second to Kawasaki in the form table with having taken 10 points from the last five games, and indeed 10 from the last four. They are unbeaten, and yeah, absolutely flying. The 0-0 draw against Hiroshima, and then they've won three on the spin. This game was absolutely mental. Joe opened the scoring just past the half hour. Shoma Doi equalised 5 minutes into the second half. Just a minute later, Takashi Kanai made it 2-1 to Nagoya. Then Kanai turned villain for Grampus. He fouled a Daigo Nishi, who were tumbled over in the box. Yuma Suzuki equalised from the penalty spot. It was a 2-2 in the 72nd minute. Kanai, well, he rescued his reputation with a lovely volley with 9 minutes to go to make it 3-2 to Grampus. And then in stoppage time, Naoki Maeda scored for the second straight game after his move from Matsumoto Yamaga. So, yeah, 4-2 it finished to Grampus. That's a three straight wins for them, Alan. And yes, before we go, we better give Grampus a mention, because we all thought they were dead and buried 4 or 5 weeks ago, but now they've hauled themselves right up into the thick of the action.
I think the key is getting a two much better centre backs than Prosha ever was. He's fortunately for Nagoya, he's out injured, and he's actually in Brazil, and to be honest, I think he might not come back. The two centre-backs are much, much better than Rocha, who was not that very good, and a 17-year-old high school kid. And then the defensive midfielder, Eduardo Neto, who's actually missed one game, three, but... and then, of course, you know, I mean, Komai and Maeda. Just basically, the half a team has changed, and I'm not sure Kazem has done to do anything with it except throw the guys on the field.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. And, yes, we've got your thoughts on the top of the table, Tobias. What about... What's looming to be a fascinating relegation dogfight? As I said, yeah, we were counting Grampus out a few weeks ago. I'm not sure if you were in that same boat, but since then, yes, they've gone on a real tear. And the next couple of games for Grampus: away at Yokohama on Wednesday night, and then home against the Tosu on Sunday. So two more relegation 6-pointers. It might be a little bit too early to call them that, but if Grampus can claim two more wins there, and in their current form you wouldn't count them out, then they could be well and truly outside the relegation zone by the end of play on Sunday night.
Yeah, so it's always better than the prediction we did before the season. I thought that Nagoya was supposed to be like Cerezo was in 2017, but promoted team going up to the ACL places. We had a lot of good transfers, I thought, to be especially mentioned maybe the goalkeeper, which is kind of a crucial position in Japanese football, with Mitch Langerak. I thought to be very special talented guy standing in the goalpost. So I was wrong there, obviously, but the interesting thing about the relegation fight this year is that almost half the league can be dragged into it. So we have very, very close standings at the table. We have now the sleeping Giants we had a few weeks back, with the Ravale Diamonds, with the AS Marinos, who play like very most of the football in Japan under Postecoglou, Nagoya Grampus, which is heavily financially as a team which should not stand there where it stood. So I think it would be difficult for teams like Asuare Cole struggling, and Nagasaki, who's hoping not much to stay in J1 and stay relevant. Everything is possible. So maybe Nagoya will still get off the table, will maybe be around the mid-table and save for next season, but I don't expect any wonders. Like, I think actually this year this is the most interesting part of the JL League, seeing who's getting relegated. Kind of like the Europe approach of failing this year, maybe.
Yes, indeed. There's obviously a lot of games are still to be played, and indeed Grampus have a game in hand on the four teams currently above them in the table. So, yes, there's a lot of water to go under a lot of bridges yet. But, yes, the next two rounds could be very, very interesting in shaping the rest of the season. So, yes, two full rounds of J1 fixtures on this coming Wednesday night, and then again on Sunday, match days 22 and 23. All right, gentlemen, well, we've powered through at the Harbour Tavern in Kobe. I hope this podcast will see the light of day and that the background noise won't be too detrimental to the listeners' experience in listening to J Talk. So before I bid you both farewell, let's do a couple of plugs. Firstly, Alan, where can the listeners find you on Twitter, etc., on the web, etc., and, well, a brief word or two on what's coming in the next issue of J Soccer Magazine, if you like.
Thank you very much, sir. Once again, my apologies. It's not Ben's fault, listeners. It's our fault for picking the bar. Sorry. Hopefully this we'll see the light of day. I'm Alan Gibson, J Soccer Magazine on Twitter, at J Soccer Magazine. Find me on Facebook, www.jsoccer.com's Facebook page and jsoccer.com's group. You can check the website, of course, www.jsoccer.com. And the next magazine, hopefully, will be out mid-September. I've got to feature a little bit of Iniesta, I think. And I'm hoping to do a big feature on the Thai players, and they're making very good waves in Japan now because of Chanati at Consadole and Tirasin. And Tiraton at Vissel Kobe. So, it's literally in the early planning stages due to various things that have gone wrong in the last few months for me. But it's going ahead, and hopefully I'll have you on. And anybody that wants a free PDF of any magazine, please drop me a line on Twitter or Facebook. I always do that. So send that PDF to anybody that's interested. Try and get some more people looking into the J-League. Thank you very much.
All right, terrific, and you'll be glad to hear, Alan, that the background noise had dropped away appreciably there while you were, giving the listeners here in your special offer. So hopefully a lot of people will...
Indeed,
a lot of people will take you up on it. All right, and Tobias, thank you very much, for making yourself available tonight. It's been fantastic to have you on for the first time. So, before we go, I've teased your Twitter handle at the beginning of the episode, but, yes, please give it out again, and where people might be able to find your work, because, we want to get transfer markets a bit more recognised.
Yeah, actually, Conroy, C-O-N-D-R-E. That's my Twitter handle personally, but if you want to follow me or our work and you happen to understand the Fahad and Eva German, please follow us at Daily Germany on Twitter and Facebook. We need some support, and if you happen to understand German, please also hear our podcast, Soul Taku, that is Soul and Taku, like Soul Taku. So we will do J-League presentations on the teams in the J-League and German language.
All right, terrific. Unfortunately, the background noise was extremely loud when you were giving out the name of your podcast there, Tobias. But yes, it's a...
Everybody was excited, I guess. Yeah.
It's a Gol Taku, a German language podcast on Japanese football. Right, fantastic. Okay, so thank you very much, gentlemen. That will do us, I think. I'll bid you farewell. Alan, thanks again for your time.
Thank you very much. Good timing. The music and the people are just getting louder and louder. So, again, sincere apologies to the listeners, and thank you for having us.
All right, and Tobias, once again, fantastic to speak to you, and enjoy the rest of your time in Japan.
Yeah, thank you. It was a real pleasure.
All right, then, that is it for this week's episode of the J-Talk podcast. My thanks again to Alan Gibson and Tobias Thryman. Speak to you next week. Bye for now.
The J-Talk podcast.